question this morning, and that is this. What is your first reaction when you are afraid? When you feel that feeling of fear, what is your first reaction? Maybe you freeze and you feel like you're in this kind of paralyzed state and you're stuck and it's hard for you to make any kind of decision. Maybe you have the opposite of a reaction to fear. Rather than feeling stuck, you just want to do something about it and attack it. Maybe you just want to run and you want to do anything you can to avoid what's causing you that fear. Or maybe you look to others for help. But I want you to think about your fear and what's causing it and what your reaction is and who do you turn to in that time of fear. Today in our passage, we're continuing our sermon series called Christmas in Isaiah, where we're looking at the different prophecies of Isaiah that were fulfilled by Christ and how they impact us. And today we're in Isaiah 7. And I'm going to actually read through all of Isaiah 7, not just 10 through 16. I believe it's on page 558 or 1071 if you have the larger print Bibles. But we're going to look at this text. And in this text, we find a king and a people who are afraid. And we will learn how God comes to them in the midst of the fear and gives them hope in that fear. So if you can join with me on your Bibles, or if you have a device, you can see we have YouVersion notes there with sermon notes as well that you can look on any device you may have. When Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram and Pekin, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has allied itself with Ephraim. So the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son Sher-Jesub, and meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool on the road to Lauder's field. Say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because these two smoldering stubs of firewood. Because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram and of the son of Remaliah, Aram and Ephraim and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, saying, let us invade Judah, let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves and make the son of Tabal king over it. Yet, this is what the sovereign Lord says. It will not take place. It will not happen. For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is only Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is only Remaliah's son. And if you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz, ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or the highest heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test. Then Isaiah said, hear now, you house of David, it is not enough to try the patience of humans. Will you also try the patience of God? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. He will be eating curds and honey from when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. For before the boy knows to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you will dread will be laid to waste. The Lord will bring on you and your people and the house of your father a time unlike any since Ephraim broke away from Judah, and he will bring the king of Assyria. Now, as I said in the opening section when I talked about fear, it's obvious that this is a fearful time in Judah. I mean, the author of Isaiah doesn't mince any words at all. He doesn't pull any punches. And in the opening verse there, right away, he admits that both Ahaz and the people of Judah are afraid. This last week, not this week so much, but the week before, there was a strong wind that came through the gorge that kept us all cool, which gave us the snow. And when I was out there the night before the snow came, I didn't really sense it at first because our house is on a hill and it's actually protected from the east. But when I looked up in my trees that are huge, I don't know how many feet, probably 50 to 60 feet, I could see them blowing back and forth. And this is the image that Isaiah uses. It says that they are shaken like the trees of the forest. This is the fear that was coming upon both Ahaz and the people of Judah. And this is the situation that's at hand as Isaiah comes to the king. Now, there's a lot of key players in this text, so I want to give you a little background because they use different terms. And so as you look at this text, there's some people that you need to keep in mind. Now, obviously, there's God and Isaiah, but I think you know who's who as far as there. It's the only terms they use. Isaiah is the prophet and God is God. But the other people here and the terms that are used for them are kind of interchangeable. So I want you to think about the terms that are used here for the key players. First of all, there's King Ahaz. He's kind of the main character, the one that Isaiah comes to. And he's the king of Judah, which are the southern two tribes of the original Israel. There was a civil war and they broke. And the descendants of David, who were the rightful kings, stuck with those two tribes. And Jerusalem is their capital. And that is who Isaiah is speaking to. But there's also two other kings who are on the war path, and that is King Pekah of Israel, and he's the leader of the ten northern tribes. So the northern tribes that split in the civil war before. And to them, Samaria is the capital. And what may be confusing in this text is not only is it referred to as Israel, but Ephraim as well. And so when you look at this text and you read through it, I want you to think about that. When it says Ephraim, that's who they have in mind. And then finally, there's King Rezin of Aram. And he's really, this is the area that's modern day Syria. So you shouldn't be surprised that Damascus is the capital city. And the reason why this fear is there is that Israel and Aram are attacking, and it says it right there in the beginning, and also says it later in verse 6, Judah, because it would not join their fight against Assyria. See, Assyria was in above even Damascus and Aram and over to its side, and it was an increasingly becoming a superpower. And these two kings saw the writing on the wall. They saw that Assyria was amassing this great area, and kind of like the Nazis did in Europe as they were marching through and taking over countries like Austria or Poland. And they wanted to do everything they could to keep it. And so they invited Ahaz to join them in a coalition and to fight against them. But Ahaz refused. And so they turned their anger towards him and started attacking him for not willing to join their forces. And this is what Isaiah describes. He's honest about the situation. This is the situation at hand. This is the situation that is causing Ahaz and all of the people of Judah fear. They have people attacking them for not doing what they wanted them to do and coming at them from all different sides. Now, what is it that causes your fear? What is it that causes you to be afraid? And how do you respond to it? That's the question I had, but I want you to think about that. Think about what it would be like for you to be King Ahaz or the people of Judah and to face this fear, because this is the situation in which the prophecy of Isaiah comes. This is the state that they're in. What is it that causes you fear? Maybe you're afraid because you have a health challenge and you don't know if you're ever going to get better. And so you feel like your health is on shaky ground. Maybe you face addictions and it's causing your life to shake back and forth and you're struggling with that. That's what's causing you fear, or to feel like you're blowing in the wind back and forth. Maybe you face financial uncertainty. You lost your job, or you had certain unexpected bills that you didn't expect during the holiday season, and you're wondering, how is all this stuff going to come together? Maybe you have political fears. You think things shifting in the world, or you read about the stuff that Russia is trying to do in our election and China, all their kind of bullying, and you're worried about what's going to happen to our future. Maybe you have relational fears. Your relationships that you thought were going to bring you hope and joy and peace and bring meaning in your life are on a rocky and hard place, and you're shaking back and forth, and there's fear there that's causing it. We may not be under physical attack, but there's all kinds of ways that our lives can be shaken by fear and all kinds of difficult situations we have. We're not unlike Ahaz in this text. And it's interesting here that it's in the midst of this fear that God comes to Ahaz. God comes to Ahaz in the midst of the fear through the prophet Isaiah. Look at this. God is the one who takes the initiative. Ahaz himself is just kind of stuck in his fear and in the midst of his fear and wondering what's happening. And it's in the midst of that that God tells Isaiah to come to him and give him comfort and peace. Ahaz is not the initiator here. Ahaz does everything wrong in his fear, but yet God comes to him and tries to bring him comfort and tries to bring him joy and tries to bring him hope and salvation. God is the initiator in this text. In the midst of his fear, God comes to that. And he sends Isaiah to an aqueduct. Now, I don't know about you, but as I read this text and I looked at it, one, there's a lot of names and you got to keep everybody in track. But on top of it, I wondered, why would Isaiah write and be so specific about where he had this meeting with Ahaz? I mean, he's like by the pool on the upper, I mean, aqueduct. I mean, why would he do that? And I think what he wants us to see here is that he's using a powerful illustration. See, Israel or Jerusalem had fed water through a ton of these aqueducts. This is actually a picture of the lower aqueduct there on the right. But it brought water from all around and actually sustained them through a lot of really difficult times. And what Isaiah wants to do, it's a visual aid right there with Ahaz, is he says, now look, I know that you're afraid, and I know that it seems like there's all reason to fear and that life is not going the way that you expect it to. But right here, this aqueduct is a symbol of the hope that comes, that you have nothing to do with it, but yet it comes and it flows into Jerusalem and brings new life. It brings you sustenance and that. And what he says then, along with this visual image of this source of life, is that this is just a glimpse of the real hope and the real joy and the real substance and desire of what can come. And that is, he says that, look, just as the spring is flowing forward, God is going to bring new life to you. And yes, you may be afraid. And yes, there may be all kinds of difficult circumstances in your life. But God will be with you. And he will bring new life and hope and peace in the midst of your life, even though it seems dry and shattered. Just like this aqueduct brings new life to the city of Jerusalem. And in the midst of that, with that image behind him, Isaiah speaks God's encouraging words of hope and comfort. I mean, listen to this. Be careful. Keep calm. Don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two smoldering stubs of firewood, because the fierce anger of these guys is here. But really what he's going to go on to say is there's a reason for this hope. This isn't just some mantra, you know, like you have on the signs, be calm and carry on or whatever they are. I mean, the reason why Isaiah tells Ahaz that he can have hope and that he can be encouraged, how he can be careful and calm and not afraid or lose heart, isn't because it's just something that he repeats to himself over and over. No, it's because God's going to come in a powerful way. He's going to come and bring redemption and salvation. And that's the next part of the text that we'll look at here in a minute. But before we do, I want you to think about your own fear and the difficult circumstances you have. In your times of fear, how has God encouraged you? Now, I've gone through many difficult times in my life. I faced cancer as a 16-year-old. My wife and I were chosen by a birth mom and had the birth mom change her mind, and we had to face through this difficult circumstance. And we went through all these difficult circumstances and even more, trying to figure out career changes and all this. And it's dark nights of the souls, those times when you're afraid of what's going to happen next to you, where you're wrestling with where is God on all this. And in those times, as I look back, it's not always easy to see it in the midst of those times, but as I look back and think about it, God has pursued me even in the midst of my fear. God has done what he did through Isaiah to Ahaz. He's challenged me and he's encouraged me. Sometimes it may be a Bible passage that I meditated on that just brought me hope. And remembering that, hey, this world is not my home, as we've looked at the last couple of weeks, that there's hope, that no matter how dark things may seem, there's new hope on the horizon. Sometimes it feels like a sense of peace that I just can't describe, that even though everything is chaotic around, that the Spirit of God gives me that peace that passes all understanding. And it doesn't necessarily last for all, you know, this long time, but it's just enough to give me what I need. Sometimes God's brought a person into my life that would say just what I needed to hear. Maybe they challenged me or just gave me a listening ear. Or maybe they told their own story, and their own story was like mine, and they talked about how dark and hopeless and afraid they were. But yet God worked to use even that most difficult circumstances and how they got through it on the other end and how God helped them grow from it. God can use those kinds of people to encourage us. And if you're in that midst of the fearful time, if you're going through this time where it feels like your life is shaking like the trees in a giant gustful wind, I want you to think about that this week. To think about the ways that God has encouraged you. We often just kind of forget this and we just kind of get consumed by the difficulties that we have, but I want you to think about this. How has God pursued you? Who has He put in your life that has given you the hope and encouragement even in the midst of fear? But not only that, I want you to think about how can God use you to bring His comfort to those around you? In the next week and 2 weeks, you're probably going to spend time with all kinds of family and friends, and you're going to have opportunities to engage with people, people who are afraid or going through really major hurts. And so I want you to think about that. Are the hurting people in your life, those that are afraid, and how can you encourage them? Maybe it's just encouraging them to come to church and to come to the Christmas service next week and to hear the story of Jesus told again. Maybe it's a listening ear. Maybe it's telling your own story and being vulnerable about how hard things really were or are, but yet you see God moving through there. But how can God use you to encourage those around you? Because that's what Isaiah does to Ahaz, or that's at least what he attempts to do. You see, he tells him to be calm and to hang on to hope, to not lose heart. Why? Not because that's a great mantra, but because the God who pursued him in the midst of his fear is at work even when Ahaz doesn't see it. And what he says is that God, and what Isaiah reminds Ahaz is that God always promises to bring salvation and judgment. He says it right there, that even though the 10 tribes of Israel and all the people of Aram who had much more superior might were attacking Ahaz, he said, it will not take place. It will not happen. And so right there, we see that God first promises that Israel and Aram will not defeat Judah, that they will get their due justice. And you can see there in verses 4 all the way through 9, how he uses this huge description of how this event, even though Judah is being attacked by Israel and Aram, that they will not get they will not win. That God will bring salvation and justice to them, and they will not achieve their goal. This is what God says. He says that they will not get their due, that He will bring salvation to Ahaz. Now, if you look here in verse 9, it's interesting because He also gives him a warning. And He says this. He says that his salvation has to come by faith alone. God says, look, I'm going to bring your salvation. I'm going to work, but you need to put your hope and trust in me. And if you do not stand firm in your faith, then you will not stand at all. God will be the one who takes action. He's the one who pursues Ahaz in the midst of his fear. He's the one who will protect Judah from the attacks of Israel and Aram. But He also says to Ahaz that you need to put your hope and trust in me, that you can't just go through the actions here, that you need to put your hope and trust in me. Now, God knows what we don't necessarily get in this text. We see a hint of it maybe, but it's made clear later in 2 Kings. And in it, it shows that there's a tug of war going on in Ahaz. Ahaz doesn't really want to put his hope and trust in God. He's got his own plans. You see, he he kind of comes to Isaiah, and God does this audacious thing. He says to him, I know that you don't have trust. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to allow you to ask for any sign to prove to you that I am a man of my word, that I will keep the covenant promises that I made to King David, that I will keep Judah on the throne, and that I will work through this situation and give you the hope that you need, that Israel and Aram will not win. And what Ahaz does is he says, oh, I could never ask the Lord for a sign. He kind of puts on this religious, he feigns religious piety. He says, I would never put God to the test. That wouldn't be the right thing to do. But really what he's saying is, I already have my own plan. And I have my own plan of salvation rather than trusting in God's. He feigns religious privacy, but rejects God and trusts his personal plan. And 2 Kings tells us what that plan is. He isn't going to put his hope and trust in God at all. Rather, he is going to make a deal with the king of the Assyrians to attack Israel and attack Aram and get his salvation that way. God comes to Ahaz in the midst of his fear. He speaks to him powerfully through a prophet, Isaiah, who's been known to speak the word of God. And yet Ahaz is so hard-hearted and stuck on his own plan in his own way of doing things that he completely rejects him. He completely turns the other way. And he does it in this religious piety way to make it sound like he's really not that bad of a guy. And he would never put God to the test. And so God announces Ahaz's own judgment at the hands of the Assyria. And we see that in verses 13 all the way to the end of the passage, 17. He says, Isaiah says, look, haven't you just tried the presence of man? And now you're trying the presence of God, or the patience of God. And so, you're going to be defeated. You're going to be defeated by the king of Assyria as well. This is what he announces. He announces that Ahaz will not get the salvation that God promised because of his lack of faith. And instead, he'll bring judgment. Now, in this section right here, it's complicated a little bit in the Hebrew, and there's some debate about scholars about exactly what's happening, because verse 14 falls right before verse 15 where he says there's judgment. And so this passage that we're going to look at, that actually we read already, where it says that a virgin will be with birth and she will call him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. And there's some folks that say, well, it seems like there's this continuity of thought. I mean, here he talks about this baby that's going to be born, Emmanuel. And then in 15, it goes to the word he, and he's going to be eating curds. And it seems like this is different. I mean, if Jesus fulfills this promise, then how does this whole thing work? I mean, was there a baby that was born in this time, or did Jesus really fulfill this? Well, there's a transition in the Hebrew where if I kind of wish that the NIV would go all Southern on us. Because throughout this conversation, there's a conversation between Isaiah and Ahaz, and it's a back and forth. But in verse 14, there's this sign that there may be something different. And the NIV doesn't translate it quite as well as I would like it. It says, I'll give you a sign. Well, it's not you as in like singular, you and me. It's the Southern you all. And so what he's saying here is look, you all, not just Ahaz, all the people around him and all of you for eternity. God is a God of his promises. And he will bring redemption and salvation. And this is the way that I see this text. See, if you look closely, I read that Isaiah was told to bring his son with him, right? I got to find his name in here again. It's It's Sher Jesib, which actually means a remnant will remain. And so what I think happens here is kind of a change in kind of tone. And Isaiah had already used the aqueduct as a visual image. And I think he takes his own child in verse 15. So first of all, he says, look, you've tried the patience of God and God's going to bring you judgment and he's going to bring salvation. And then he says, y'all, he's going to show you that God is a God who keeps his promise for all eternity, that the King of David will come and that king will bring redemption. That's the virgin who's going to have a birth. And you're going to call him God is with us. And then he brings his own kid in verse 15 and says he will be eating curds and the honey that when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. And basically what he's saying is when my own son in verse 2 or 3, I forget which it is, when he's here, when he grows up, Ahaz, you're going to get the judgment that I prophesied and you're going to get your doom. But there's a time switch there. There's a change of audience and it's easy for us to look over. But in that verse 14, God makes a major, major announcement. He announces that salvation will be for you all. Believers and those who aren't. That someday, in a different time and place, in the very far future, God will bring a son who will be born to a virgin and they will be call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. Now we stand on the other side of history of this birth and the Bible makes it absolutely clear that this event happened and that when Isaiah made this prophecy in verse 14, he was talking about Jesus. Because Matthew says in Matthew 1, which we read in our call to worship, that Jesus fulfilled this. I mean, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, and he said that this is the fulfillment of that promise. That all this, that he came to Joseph and said, I know this doesn't make sense. I know that you were betrothed to Mary, and that you haven't had any kind of sexual relationships with her, and that she's pregnant. And you're wondering what's going on. But I'm going to tell you that this is all from God. Nothing of this happened by chance. Because I am going to use this situation, a child being born of a virgin, to come, God with us, Emmanuel, and fulfill this promise that Isaiah made. And so, when Isaiah makes this prophecy, he not only brings hope to those who are fearful and Ahaz saying that he will, and the people of Judah, that he will bring them the salvation that they need from their enemies, but he brings hope to all of us who are in fear. Because our greatest fear is that when the end of our life comes, that we're going to have to face our Maker and we're going to have to face judgment for what we have. And if it's not your greatest fear, it should be. Because this is what the Bible says happens. And what the Bible tells us is that the Jesus, the baby that we're going to celebrate with our kids program here, was God himself who came as a human being and was born to a virgin. And it's a miracle the way that it happens. And yes, it defies all logic. But when Jesus came as a baby, he came to bring salvation to all who believe by faith alone. Jesus, the baby, grew up to live a sinless life. He grew up to be a one who brought the kingdom of God at hand and who taught over and over again that he was God himself. And that Jesus died on the cross. And on that cross, he not only suffered a huge and excruciating physical death, he suffered an even worse spiritual torture as well, where he faced the wrath of God for the sins that you and I commit. But he also said that it was finished. And he rose again from the dead and he showed that he had defeated sin and death. And he rose again and he gives us life. And the Bible tells us that we have a choice, just like Ahaz. We can put our hope and trust in our own religious piety. Hey, I'm really not that bad of a person. I mean, I kind of have my life together. Or we can put our hope and trust in what Christ has done. Jesus, God, Emmanuel. So we have that same choice. Will we trust our own wisdom, our own view of the world? Maybe we even don't think that this whole God thing even exists. Will we trust our own thinking of it's only by being a good person or doing more good things than bad things that I'll get to heaven? Or is it by admitting that we're a sinner in need of God's grace and trusting that what Christ did on the cross, God's initiative, God coming to us, God working in us, is the way that we're saved? Ephesians 2 says that it's for by grace alone you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is a gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. So today, I not only want you to think about your fear and the way that God has pursued you and how you can encourage them, I want you to think about that own your own choice that you have as well. Have you put your hope and trust in God Emmanuel, the baby that was prophesied in Isaiah? And do you trust that what God accomplished through him, through his life, through his death, through his resurrection, is truly how you're saved? That's the question that Isaiah should challenge us. Because this is the only thing that can bring us salvation. And it's not by what we do. It's only by faith alone. Let's pray.